Hello everyone, and welcome to a special edition of Broken But Glorious Wrestling Podcast. I'm your solo host, Oliver Newman, author of A Fan's Perspective, 2016, What a Year to Be a Fan of WWE, and A Fan's Perspective, One Man's Exploration of British Wrestling. It's a special edition of Broken But Glorious Wrestling Podcast because I'm here to report on New Japan's Wrestle Kingdom 12. So without any further ado, let's get to it. It started stupidly early in the UK. It was 6:30 start in the morning for me. And the first match was the pre-show rumble. It was quite a shocker to see Delirious of ROH fame in the rumble. It was quite fun as well. Seeing Hooji Nagata again, one of my Japanese favourite wrestlers from back in the day, was worth getting up at 6:30 in the morning. Takumi Shinoku as well. I never expected that. That was brilliant. Nagata, much like Wrestle Kingdom 11, gets ganged up on and sadly is eliminated. Jushin Thunder Liger of, you know, New Japan pro wrestling legend and pro wrestling legend in general. His iconic theme is well worth being up at stupid o'clock in the morning. So, always great to see Jushin Thunder Liger. Satoshi Kojima, once again, back in the ring. And always great to see him, another one of my favourite Japanese wrestlers from the early 2000s. And basically, I sum this up as the New Japan pre-show rumble was the rumble of legends. Liger, Nagata, Kojima, you know, it was just a fun little thing just before the show. The final four, and then it was Kakihara of UWF fame in the back in the day, and it was announced on commentary that he's survived cancer, which is a testament to the man, and he then went on to win the pre-show rumble. So that is Masahito Kakihara wins the pre-show rumble, and there's not a dry eye in the house. Amazing achievement and a testament to the man, like I said. And then we go into the actual show itself, and what Wrestle Kingdom 11 didn't do last year, Wrestle Kingdom 12 did this year, and that was they started off hot with the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team titles between Roppongi 3K and the Young Bucks. And this was a very good match to start the show. Fast-paced, innovative, and even told a really, really cool story. There was injuries to the backs of Matt Jackson, I believe, and I'm not quite sure which one it was of those guys, because they're new to me. But basically, there was back injury story in the actual match, and it led to some comedic moments, some funny, hilarious moments, and some good storytelling. It was really, really cool, and it was a very good match, and one of, if not the hottest team in professional wrestling today, the Young Bucks win their 7th IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team titles, and can't say they don't deserve it. Absolutely tremendous tag team, have been for the longest time, and the world scene, what we knew, from when they started out, they've always been a tremendous tag team, and on the global stage of Wrestle Kingdom 12, where you could watch it on New Japan Pro Wrestling World around the world, they shone brightly. It was fantastic. The next match was a 6-man never open weight championship gauntlet, and this was all action, multi-man match, chaotic is the word to sum it up. The moments that I remember from this match is Zack Sabre Jr., who I wrote about at great length in my British wrestling book before he was a star, submitting Raymond Rowe, I think it was, and Raymond Rowe is a big guy, so it was a tremendous submission hold from Zack Sabre Jr. to take out a man, I think he was twice the size of him. And like I said, chaotic, all action match. Multi-man matches are not the best for a writer to kind of keep a hold of and a track of. So, apologies if I'm missing anything out. But yeah, just my takeaway from the match was just enjoyable. Once again, Tomohiro Ishii and Yano were, fun to watch. Their cheating is something completely different to what New Japan stands for. So that made it unique. Juice Robinson was, he's really stepped up in New Japan. Beretta had a really good performance in the match. And he actually won the NEVER Openweight Six-Man Tag Team Championships. So it was a tremendous way to add to the show. Yeah, Trent Barretta, Yano and Ishii became the new NEVER Openweight Six-Man Tag Team Champions. There we go. That was difficult to say. The next match was Cody versus Kota Ibushi. I had to go to work at the time, so I had to do a social media blackout, and I came back to watch it later. The crossroads off the apron was absolutely brutal, and the other takeaway from the match was Brandi Rhodes, her like distractions and stuff was pretty cool, and the fact that it was all a big setup and stuff. And the shock was that the Bushi won. I from the little snippets I caught on Twitter during the day, I actually thought Cody won the match. So I was shocked when Kota Ibushi won, in a good way, because he's a tremendous athlete and a great wrestler. So not sure where Cody goes from here, but big win for Kota Ibushi. The next match was the IWGP Tag Team Titles, and it was a slugfest. I was happy that the Killer Elite squad of Archer and Dave Boy Smith Jr., who for the longest time I thought was so underutilized in the US as singles and tag team wrestlers, for Archer, Lance Hoyt in TNA wrestling. He had Hoyt Mania, and I thought he was going to be a big star. An amazing match against Abyss that I remember. Stealing the show, and obviously for David Boy Smith Jr. Teaming with Tyson Kidd as the Hart Dynasty, they were the tag team champions, and I always thought that he never really got a chance in the WWE, to kind of be the wrestler he needed to be. And I was so impressed in this match with how they were booked. Really strong all the way through the match. I know they lost to Evil and Sonata in the end, but they looked like absolute monsters, beasts, in terms of the way they were beating up the young boys, and they put a beating on Evil and Sonata. So yeah, really, really good performance from the Killer Elite squad, and it showed that you can look really strong, which New Japan does really well. You can look strong in defeat. So that was a really good match, and I enjoyed it a lot.
Hey everybody, this is Steve Wilson, the man behind the monster Congo Kong, and you are listening to Broken But Glorious.
The next match was the NEVER Openweight title match between Minoru Suzuki and Hirooki Goto. And this was just insane, really. If you like your Japanese strong style, just strikes. Suzuki is somebody who's just in intense. He's striking. His facial expressions. It's just everything about him. He's just badass. And Goto's resilience was incredible because he was getting beat down, and it was an incredible performance from him. And I have to say, Suzuki's dropkick midway through the match was just out of this world, up there with AJ Styles and Kushida Okada with the dropkick. It was amazing. That it's worth watching that match just to see that. In the end, Goto wins the NEVER Openweight title, and Suzuki, because it's a hair versus hair match, I forgot to mention, Suzuki comes back and shaves a piece of his hair and then leaves the ring. So he didn't have much hair to begin with, so it was a strange stipulation, but, you know, good match. Next match was the Fatal 4-Way for the IWGP Junior title. Mighty Skrull's entrance was amazing. This was an absolutely awesome match, and my takeaway from it was, why can't WWE book its extremely talented 205 Live roster like New Japan does its junior division? See, with the New Japan junior division, it doesn't feel like it's a step down to be in the junior division, or, you know, or lower on the card, or what have you, in the middle of the card, or, you know, the opening match. It doesn't feel like it's a step down. But if a wrestler on Raw or SmackDown Live is taken from out of that and put in the 205 Live division, it does feel like a step down. It shouldn't do. And that's the really frustrating thing with WWE, because you've got amazing athletes who could be having this kind of match in a WWE ring. And they did during the WWE Cruiserweight Classic, and they have done during certain 205 Live matches, but they could be having these kind of matches every week, and 205 Live would be one of the best shows on the WWE network, as opposed to being just another show. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. I just really want WWE to take notice of how New Japan has books its junior division, and how it's always booked this junior division. There are legends in the junior division, and that's how it could be for the 205 Live, and I really want them to take notice and kind of move forward from here and see if they can do the same with their division. The next match was Switchblade Jay White against Hiroshi Tanahashi, and I really enjoyed this match. I thought it was a huge performance by Switchblade Jay White. I really enjoyed his pre-match interview on New Japan Pro Wrestling World, and I got really behind the character, and I was like, okay, now I just want to see him in the ring. And I thought it was a really good performance. I think he's got a huge big upside, and I think he'll be a big star for New Japan in the years to come. In terms of this match, he worked over Tanahashi's knee, and he was doing a really good job, like, cutting him down and stuff. And then Tanahashi jumps to the top rope and then hits the finishing move. But I don't know, that just didn't make sense to me. It's like, well, your knee's injured, so I don't know why you're finishing the match from the top rope. Yeah, like I said, Jay White's performance was fantastic. Tanahashi is the ace of New Japan, and I think once again one of the great things that New Japan does is takes a guy who has, you know, has gone around the world, come back as a brand new person, puts him in a match like they did with Okada before he went on to become the longest reigning IWGP champion in history. And gives them an opportunity so that they could go and they could. And I can't really see this in any other company. I can't see somebody being plucked out and put against a guy, and then a top guy in a company, and then given a chance to really excel. And New Japan does this brilliantly. So kudos to them. And then the next match was the match that I know I signed up for, New Japan Pro Wrestling World on the 1st of January. And that is the Alpha versus Omega Chris Jericho versus Kenny Omega, and I have to say that this was a dream match that delivered in spades. Just everything about it, the skill, the technique, the blood, the fighting around ringside, the code breaker, the one-winged angel, on the chair that finished the match. Just everything about it was fantastic. And I have one question to ask, and that is, can anyone truly say that Kenny Omega isn't the very best professional wrestler in the world? This match was worth your £6.87 if you're in the UK for the month of watching New Japan Pro Wrestling. It was fantastic. Match of the night. One of, you know, Chris Jericho's greatest performances, one of Kenny Omega's as well. And if you haven't seen this match, you need to see it immediately. And last but no means least was the IWGP Heavyweight Championship match between Tetsuro Naito and Kashika Okada. And this, there's no doubt about it, this was a battle. You know, they, I'm, but personally, and then one of the things with New Japan that I'm really not a fan of is the multiple finishes. I really think they dilute the move. So for everyone says that the Rainmaker is so effective, well, if it's so effective, you shouldn't need to do it five times. And seeing the Destino more than once or twice, it's a brilliant move. But once again, it should be ending the match. I feel that if this was happening in WWE, fans would be up in arms. From, you know, for myself, one or two finishing moves. But basically one finishing move, and then one super finishing move. And that should be end of the match. And I kind of feel that the issue with New Japan is the use of the multiple finishes. I really think it takes you out of the match, and it took me out of the match a little bit. There's no doubt about it. Okada, is a fantastic wrestler, but I don't know. There's just something there that's not clicking with me. The matches I've seen, I think his opponents have been better than him. So I might have to watch some more and see if my opinion changes. But at the end of this match, once again, I've seen all the build-up. I saw the fall and rise of Tetsuro and Naito. And I saw the videos, and I saw, you know, threads on Twitter and stuff. And everything was building up towards him becoming the IWGP champion. And I was hugely disappointed that he didn't become the IWGP champion. I don't understand that booking decision, and it really left me with a bit of a sour taste at the end of the show. And yeah, that's how I felt about it, really. But if I, you know, if you look at it, I think I might have been spoiled because of seeing Wrestle Kingdom 11, and the fact that a lot of that was just out of this world fantastic. And because I watched that, you know, a day or two before, Wrestle Kingdom 12 paled a little bit in comparison. And I know that sounds crazy because there isn't a bad match on the card. You know, most matches are good or better. And obviously, Cody versus Kota Ibushi is good or better. The IWGP Junior Tag Team Titles match is very good. The IWGP Tag Titles match was good. The IWGP Junior Heavyweight Title match was awesome. Alpha versus Omega was outstanding. So you definitely got your money's worth with Wrestle Kingdom 12. And yeah, that's all that I think I need to and can say about the event, really. I think it was a very good show, and yeah, definitely worth the £6.87 on its own. And obviously you get a month's worth of that, and I've really been enjoying watching the different matches New Japan World, Pro Wrestling World, sorry, has to offer. So, yeah, I hope you've enjoyed hearing my New Japan Pro Wrestling Wrestle Kingdom 12 thoughts. And once again, this is Oliver Newman of Broken But Glorious Wrestling Podcast and author of A Fan's Perspective 2016, What a Year to Be a Fan of WWE. Sorry. And A Fan's Perspective, One Man's Exploration of British Wrestling.